Recording Library of West Texas for January 25th, 2021. I'm Michael, and coming up in the program today, we'll be reading articles such as these. Johnson & Johnson will have 100 million COVID-19 vaccines for Americans by April, says board member. COVID-19 second doses may be scheduled up to 6 weeks later, CDC says. Moderna says its COVID-19 vaccine is expected to protect against new variants. CDC reviewing new data that suggests coronavirus variant identified in UK could be more deadly. Merck halts development of its COVID-19 vaccine candidates. Healthy young Americans will likely get COVID-19 vaccine in mid to late summer, expert says. Drug prevents virus infections in nursing homes, maker claims. Fauci says it probably won't make a difference if second vaccine doses are delayed by a couple of weeks. CDC still working on goal to double coronavirus sequences to expand hunt for mutations. About 6 in 10 Americans don't know when or where to get a COVID-19 vaccine, study finds. Cat tests positive for COVID-19. Medical tourism is drawing patients, even in a pandemic. Those stories and more are coming up. We'll first look at the numbers. Today, we're getting our numbers from the Texas Health and Human Services. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 6,903. Probable cases, 6,333. Fatalities, 284. Estimated active cases, 1,693. Estimated recovered, 11,259. Midland County, confirmed cases, 13,848. Fatalities, 209. Estimated active cases, 1,745. Estimated recovered, 11,894. From the Texas Tribune, average new cases in Texas decreased by 5,060 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 24th, 9,731 new confirmed cases and 1,358 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 829 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 24th, 12,899 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 17 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 24th, 208 new deaths were reported. Here are some coronavirus briefs. The United States reported 130,485 new coronavirus infections and 1,769 virus-related fatalities on Sunday, according to Johns Hopkins University data. According to JHU's tally, the nationwide totals now stand at 25,124,954 cases, including 419,209 deaths. Vaccine numbers. At least 41,411,550 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 21,848,655 shots administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. President Biden aims to impose a ban on travelers entering the U.S. from South Africa, Brazil, and several European countries that allows travel across open borders, a move aimed at slowing the spread of the coronavirus variants, Reuters reported. The limits apply to non-U.S. citizens. The coronavirus vaccine, developed by Moderna, triggers an immune response that protected in laboratory tests against two variants of the virus, first detected in Britain and South Africa, the company said Monday. Google will invest $155 million in supporting education and equitable access for the coronavirus vaccine, including using company locations as vaccination sites and expanding search information for users Googling vaccines near me. CVS completes first round of vaccines in skilled nursing facilities. It will likely take until summer for the average healthy young American to have access to COVID-19 vaccination, a top infectious disease expert said. Now here are some short articles. Johnson & Johnson will have 100 million COVID-19 vaccines for Americans by April, says board member. From CNN Health's Andrea Diaz. Johnson & Johnson's board member, Dr. Mark McClellan, said on Thursday the company plans to have enough vaccines for 100 million Americans by spring. I do know that J&J is making a very large supply, going all out with its production, both here in the U.S. and elsewhere around the world, with the goal of having perhaps enough vaccines for 100 million Americans by spring, by this April or so, McClellan told CNBC. So that's going to make a big difference in supply availability over the coming weeks and months, if the clinical trial does work out. McClellan also said the vaccine's clinical trial is going on at very large scale right now to make sure it's safe and effective. Close to seeking EUA. Dr. Anthony Fauci said Thursday that Johnson & Johnson is right around the corner from seeking emergency use authorization for its COVID-19 vaccine from the FDA. Johnson & Johnson is right around the corner, which means that they're probably a couple of weeks away from getting the data looked at to have the FDA evaluate whether or not we're in a situation where we could move ahead and start thinking about getting it out to the public, Fauci told CNN's Chris Cuomo. Fauci also stated that Johnson & Johnson's vaccine has some advantages, as it's a single shot, and it does not have a stringent of a cold chain requirement. However, when asked if AstraZeneca is close to requesting an EUA for its vaccine as well, Fauci said they're behind. AstraZeneca is not quite there yet. You know, that's one being tested in multiple countries, but it's a bit behind, but not too far behind, Fauci said. COVID-19 vaccine second doses may be scheduled up to 6 weeks later, CDC says, from CNN Health's Michael Nettleman. People can schedule their second doses of COVID-19 vaccine up to 6 weeks after their first doses if they are otherwise unable to get one in the recommended time frame, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said in guidance updated Thursday. The recommended time between doses is 3 weeks for Pfizer-BioNTech's vaccine and 4 weeks for Moderna's vaccine. The second dose should be administered as close to the recommended interval as possible, the latest guidance says. However, if it is not feasible to adhere to the recommended interval, the second dose of Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines may be scheduled for administration up to 6 weeks, 42 days, after the first dose. There are currently limited data on efficacy of mRNA COVID-19 vaccines administered beyond this window. If the second dose is administered beyond these intervals, there is no need to restart the series. The updated CDC guidance appears to clarify earlier language that said there is no maximum interval between the first and second doses for either vaccine. Delaying the second vaccine dose up to 6 weeks is in line with what World Health Organization advisors said earlier this month. CDC says its guidance may be updated as new information and new types of COVID-19 vaccines become available. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said people would be taking a chance if they follow the CDC's updated guidance. You're taking a chance. The data from the clinical trials showed that in the Moderna trial, you should get the boost 28 days after the prime. That's what I got. I got it exactly 28 days later. When you're dealing with Pfizer, it's 21. That's where the data show that is the optimal effect, Fauci told CNN's Chris Cuomo on Thursday. Fauci said it's possible that delaying the second dose is not going to be a big deal. However, he said, we don't know for sure because the vaccine data hasn't been looked at for this extended time period between doses. Moderna says its COVID-19 vaccine is expected to protect against new variants, from CNN's Elizabeth Cohen. The Moderna COVID-19 vaccine created antibodies that neutralized coronavirus variants first found in the United Kingdom and South Africa, the company said in a news release Monday. Two doses of the vaccine is expected to be protective against emerging strains detected to date, according to the release. The company's study showed that the variant first found in the UK had no significant impact on the vaccine's effectiveness. The results for the variant first spotted in South Africa, however, were not as optimistic. And some early studies have suggested vaccines may be somewhat less effective against this strain. In the press release, Moderna noted that a six-fold reduction in neutralizing titers was observant with the variant discovered in South Africa relative to prior variants. The company said the vaccine was still expected to be effective. Despite this reduction, neutralizing titer levels with the variant discovered in South Africa remain above levels that are expected to be protective, according to the news release. David Montefiore, a virologist at Duke University Medical Center, said while he's cautiously optimistic Moderna's vaccine will work well against this strain, he's still not sure. The efficacy might be reduced somewhat, but it still may be very effective, he said. Hopefully, the vaccine will still be 70 to 80% effective. The variant, first identified in the UK, has also appeared in more than 45 other countries, including 195 cases in the US. The variant, first identified in South Africa, has appeared in more than 20 other countries. No cases have been confirmed in the U.S., but experts say it's likely there are cases, and U.S. surveillance, which has been widely criticized, has not yet found them. CDC reviewing new data that suggests coronavirus variant identified in U.K. could be more deadly. From CNN's Elizabeth Cohen. Scientists at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are speaking with U.K. health officials to learn more about British data that suggests a new coronavirus variant could be more deadly. The CDC has reached out to U.K. officials and is reviewing their new mortality data associated with variant B117, a CDC official told CNN Saturday, using the scientific name for the variant first spotted in the U.K. in November. A UK report released Friday states that there is a realistic possibility that the new variant has a higher death rate than the other variants. While the data is not conclusive, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson said there is some evidence that the new variant may be associated with a higher degree of mortality. Merck halts development of its COVID-19 vaccine candidates. From CNN's Jamie Gumbrett. Pharmaceutical giant Merck announced Monday it is discontinuing development of its COVID-19 vaccine candidates after early studies showed immune responses were inferior to natural infection and other COVID-19 vaccines. Merck said it plans to submit results from phase 1 trials of its vaccine candidates known as V590 and V591 for publication in a peer-reviewed journal. Two COVID-19 vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna have already been authorized for emergency use in the United States by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Both are about 95% effective after two doses. Drug prevents virus infections in nursing homes, maker claims. From the New York Times, Gina Colata. An unusual experiment to prevent nursing home staff members and residents from infection with the coronavirus has succeeded, the drug maker Eli Lilly said on Thursday. A drug containing monoclonal antibodies, laboratory-grown virus fighters, prevented symptomatic infections in residents who were exposed to the virus, even the frail older people who are the most vulnerable, according to preliminary results of a study conducted in partnership with the National Institutes of Health. The researchers found an 80% reduction in infections among residents who got the drug, compared with those who got a placebo, and a 60% reduction among the staff, Eli Lilly said. The study included 965 participants in nursing homes, 666 staff members, and 299 residents. The data have not yet been peer-reviewed or published. The company expects to present its findings at a future medical meeting and to publish them in a peer-reviewed journal, but did not give a timeline. The drug Bamlanivimab has an emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration that allows it to be provided to symptomatic patients early in the course of their infection. This study is sought to establish whether the drug could stop infections before they started. It was an unusual experiment. In trucks equipped with mobile labs, medical workers sped to nursing homes the moment a single infection was detected there. Then they set up temporary infusion centers to administer the drug. Although the study has ended, Dr. Daniel Skovronsky, Eli Lilly's chief scientific officer, said the company would continue to rush to nursing homes in its study network when an outbreak is detected. Everyone will get the drug, he said. CDC still working on goal to double coronavirus sequences to expand hunt for mutations. From CNN Health's Elizabeth Cohen. The U.S. Centers for Disease and Control and Prevention, the CDC, did not meet a goal to quickly ramp up surveillance for possibly dangerous coronavirus mutations, according to numbers from the federal agency. At the beginning of the year, Dr. Gregory Armstrong, director of the CDC's Office of Advanced Molecular Detection at the National Center for Emerging and Zoonotic Infectious Diseases, told CNN he hoped that over the next 2 weeks that the agency would more than double the number of coronavirus genomes being sequenced in the U.S. While the number of sequences did increase over those 2 weeks, it did not double. The hope was to sequence an additional 3,500 coronavirus samples per week, but only 2,250 to 2,650 additional samples were sequenced, according to CDC numbers, with more expected soon as private labs have recently come online to help in the effort. Hunting for the new mutations is a critical part of combating the spread of the virus. While most mutations are harmless, some might be able to spread more quickly, be more deadly, or be resistant to coronavirus vaccines. The U.S. has been criticized for having a lackluster sequencing program. Last week, President-elect Joe Biden said he would increase funding for coronavirus surveillance efforts when he takes office. "We simply do not have the kind of robust surveillance capabilities that we need to track outbreaks and mutations," according to a Biden's American Rescue Plan issued last week. The U.S. ranks 33rd in the world for sequences per 1,000 cases of COVID-19, falling behind other countries that have far fewer resources, such as Senegal and Sierra Leone, according to an analysis by the Broad Institute of Harvard and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, using data from GISAID, an independent data-sharing initiative. "We're not even doing as good as Ouagadougou," said Dr. Peter Hotez, an infectious disease specialist at Baylor College of Medicine, referring to the capital of Burkina Faso. Hotez added that when it comes to genomic sequencing, the U.S. comes up profoundly small, and that's tragic, and it's costing American lives. About 6 in 10 Americans don't know when or where to get a COVID-19 vaccine, study finds. From CNN Health's Andrea Diaz. About 6 in 10 Americans don't know when or where to get a coronavirus vaccine, a new report from the Kaiser Family Foundation finds. The report, based on surveys conducted from January 11th to the 18th, with 1,563 participants, also suggests Americans are experiencing a range of emotions as a result of the chaotic vaccine rollout. Half said they are frustrated, a third said they felt confused, and a quarter said they were angry. The Biden administration has been left with a huge challenge on vaccine administration. Most Americans don't know when or where they can get a vaccine, including older Americans who are already eligible to get a vaccine in a growing number of states. KFF President and CEO Drew Altman said in a news release Friday. Understandably, large numbers of people are frustrated, angry, and confused. The survey also found that 55% of essential workers they interviewed said they have enough information about where to get a vaccine, but do not have enough information to know when they will be eligible for the shots. Additionally, 21% of healthcare workers interviewed who have not yet gotten vaccinated said they don't have enough information about how to obtain a coronavirus vaccine. The report also found Black, Hispanic, and lower-income adults are among the groups least likely to say they have enough information about vaccines. At least 6 in 10 said they don't have enough information about where to get vaccinated, and at least two-thirds said they don't have enough information about when they can get vaccinated. About half, 48%, of the public expects vaccine distribution to get better under President Biden's administration, while most others expect the situation to stay about the same, 36%. Relatively few, 12%, expect distribution to get worse, the survey stated. Regardless of personal politics, most of the survey participants, 60%, rated their state government's performance on vaccine as only fair or poor. Cat tests positive for COVID-19. From CNN's Gowon Bay in Seoul. South Korea reported its first case of an animal COVID-19 infection after a household cat tested positive for the virus, according to the country's Disease Control and Prevention Agency, KDCA. The cat tested positive for COVID-19 on January 21st, KDCA said in a news release Monday. Three cats were tested after their owners, a mother and her daughter, tested positive for the virus. One of the animals also tested positive. The prayer home where the cats live is located in South Korea's South Gyeongsang province, where the mother and daughter also stayed. At least 112 COVID-19 cases have been linked to the prayer home in the past week, KDCA added. The cat has been separated from other cats to prevent spread within a pet care shelter. KDCA said there have been no reports of pets infecting humans, but the care unit is looking at the infected cat with PPE gear as a preventative measure. Health authorities and the Animal and Plant Quarantine Agency will work on a COVID-19 related guideline for pets. Medical tourism is drawing patients, even in a pandemic, by Ceylon Yagensu, New York Times. The coronavirus pandemic has pushed millions of Americans into poverty and stripped more than 5.4 million of them of their health insurance, according to a study by Families USA, a nonpartisan consumer advocacy group. Many people have put off medical procedures and seen their health deteriorate significantly. The fear of large medical bills has outweighed fear of contagion for some, giving rise to an increased number of patients seeking medical treatment in a foreign country. We are seeing a pent-up demand for medical tourism during the pandemic, particularly in the U.S., where a fast-growing number of Americans are traveling across the land border with Mexico for health purposes, said David G. Viquest IV, the founder of the Center for Medical Tourism Research and a professor at the University of the Incarnate Word in San Antonio. Even before the pandemic, millions of Americans traveled to other countries for savings of 40% to 80% on medical treatments, according to the Global Medical Tourism Guide, Patients Beyond Borders. Mexico and Costa Rica have become the most popular destinations for dental care, cosmetic surgery, and prescription medicines, while Thailand, India, and South Korea draw patients for more complex procedures involving orthopedics, cardiovascular issues, cancer, and fertility treatment. In 2019, 1.1% of Americans traveling internationally did so for health treatments, according to the National Travel and Tourism Office, although that figure accounts only for those who went by air. Medical tourism has been decimated by coronavirus restrictions, but even so, the twin crises of the economy and the enormous strain that COVID-19 has placed on the already faulty American healthcare system are pushing many patients to travel. Demand for non-essential surgeries has also been building up after more than 177,000 scheduled surgeries were postponed in the United States between March and June last year, according to the Center for Medical Tourism Research. And finally, I have a bit of a longer article to read from the Washington Post that I've been holding for a few days when we would have time to read this. Veterans Affairs employees say they need more support to fight COVID-19. By Joe Davidson, published January 18th. With COVID-19 ravaging the nation at record rates, many Department of Veterans Affairs employees say they lack the support needed to fight the disease. A survey conducted by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, which represents VA workers, indicates most staffers were not informed when colleagues contracted the coronavirus. About half were not told patients had COVID-19 before healthcare providers served them, and some workers did not have adequate personal protective equipment to shield against the infection. The VA, the nation's largest healthcare system, disputed the survey findings, saying it had performed well in combating COVID. Here are the top lines from 1,786 responses to the survey that was sent to union members in December. 60% of respondents reported their facility did not alert them when fellow staff members contracted COVID-19. Nearly 50% said they were not notified before working with COVID-positive patients. Almost 40% reported not having adequate PPE. More than 88% said they knew of an employee at their facility who had contracted COVID-19. Susan Carter, director of the VA's Media Relations Office in Washington, listed a number of COVID-related accomplishments in an email. She said union bosses should be praising this success rather than trying to sow division. According to the VA, the department's current employee infection rate is less than 1%, much lower than other healthcare systems. All VA medical centers have adequate capacity, PPE, and supplies to meet current demand. The VA has given 203,459 employees and 129,322 veterans at least one dose of a vaccine as of Thursday. As part of the VA's COVID response, it has hired more than 72,000 healthcare workers since late March. The picture that the VA's Media Relations Office paints is not what many employees in the trenches see. Staffers are not told in advance when working with infected colleagues, said Terry James, a registered VA nurse in Indianapolis and president of the union's local affiliate there. Instead, they learn about it from word of mouth. We are also not informed when a patient with whom we have been directly providing care to turns COVID positive. Again, we find out from other coworkers, she wrote in an email. Regarding protective equipment, the record is mixed. We have adequate PPE, but not always the right type, James wrote. Management continues to provide staff who work directly with COVID and non-COVID patients non-medical face masks when employees are working with patients outside of COVID rooms. These masks are clearly marked, not for medical use. When healthcare providers enter the room of a COVID-positive patient, they are provided the N95 masks needed for protection, she said. Despite the additional healthcare hiring since March, there is a shortage of RN staff to provide inpatient care, according to James. Patient workload is heavy. Duties for COVID nurses in her facility are much greater than those in other wards, she said. Those additional duties include housekeeping, drawing blood, doing electrocardiograms, escorting patients, meal service, stocking PPEs outside of isolation rooms, and other aspects of patient care. Management is not following its own COVID-19 response plan, according to James. By not following this standard operating procedure, the medical center has placed multiple staff in harm's way by not limiting the number of services or staff into the COVID isolation areas. Management was given a list of their own violations of the standard operating procedure that they wrote. No corrections have been made to ensure a safe working condition. Richard Griffith, an Indianapolis VA Medical Center spokesperson, said he needed specifics, including dates, times, locations, and employee names, before responding to James' operating procedure complaints. About her other points, he said that these allegations are ridiculous. The Indianapolis VA Medical Center follows all laws and policies regarding access to patient and employee information, including cases involving COVID-19, he wrote in an email, and has always followed masking guidelines provided by VA Central Office and the Centers for Disease Control. Additionally, sufficient PPE exists to meet the needs of employees and patients. At the national level, the union has complained that since March, the VA's mismanagement of the pandemic response and lack of transparency put frontline workers, their families, and veterans at risk, AFGE President Everett B. Kelly said by phone. Mishandling of the pandemic has contributed to the spread of the virus throughout the facilities at an alarming rate. The VA reported 191,608 cumulative cases of COVID, including VA patients and employees, as of Sunday evening, according to the department's database. There were 7,909 deaths, including 3,001 among inpatients and 114 employees, which included five staffers in Indianapolis, more than any other VA location except one. In the midst of the pessimistic numbers like these, Kelly finds a ray of optimism. His expectation that VA's management and transparency will improve as soon as President Trump is gone. That is your coronavirus update for this Monday, January 25th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up next, we will be bringing you Health Magazine. Following at 2 o'clock, we'll have news from USA Today, and then the local news at 3 o'clock. And here are some of the articles that our volunteers are reading today. From the Midland Reporter Telegram, Superintendent Pick, Ramsey on calendar, center decisions around students. Business. Midland ends 2020 with 8% unemployment. Rate drops more than 1 point from November to December. Vaccinations begin. Midland Health opens mass vaccination hub. From the Odessa American, servants out as Odessa High School football coach, led program for 5 seasons. Mass vaccination practice run successful. Ratliff Stadium effort begins Sunday. Murray says ECISD is not going back to normal. Uncertainty continuing in pandemic. Mass vaccination underway. City and hospital work together. Some issues during first day, but mostly smooth. And National Blood Donor Month. Those are a few of the articles coming up at 3 o'clock, and then at 6, we'll bring you more news from the Wall Street Journal. As always, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back at 1 tomorrow afternoon with more news about the coronavirus. In the meanwhile, be well, stay safe, and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 57 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-50s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from the Health Magazine, and I'll begin with a story by Jennifer King Lindley, called LEAP. Making a meaningful change in your life can be daunting, but it can also be refreshing and invigorating, setting you on a path to a richer, deeper experience in the year ahead. Here are some ideas and some inspiration to help begin your transformation. How to prioritize your well-being. Soak up this insight and advice from Ebony Butler, PhD psychologist, food relationship strategist. Why do women have such a hard time with self-care? My clients often say, but I have to do all the work things, the mom things, the wife things. Everyone else needs comes first. I work with women to help them realize they are worthy of good care too. You can't show up for others if you don't show up for yourself. You wouldn't give someone a burned out candle as a gift. That is all we have to offer if we get too depleted. Have you struggled with this yourself? As a black woman, the idea that we are supposed to do for others is ingrained over generations. My mother took care of other people for a living, as did her mother. There's the stereotype of the mammy matriarch, the one who looks after everybody else. This becomes expected of black women, and sometimes you internalize that message. It goes deep. So where do we begin to change? It takes a mindset shift, a decision to make yourself a priority now and not wait for some perfect time in the future. A perfect time never comes. Choose the lowest hanging fruit. It might be packing yourself a healthier lunch or going for a walk. When you start with small wins, you gain confidence. You realize the world around you still functions. What should be some top priorities in everyone's self-care? From good sleep flows everything, your mood, your appetite, your energy. I make sure to get in 7 hours. Sometimes I have to tell myself, forget those dirty dishes. Rest is more important. I also encourage clients to add more nutritious foods to their diet. We have long focused on bad foods to restrict. That approach hasn't worked and has messed up our relationship with food. Instead, ask yourself, how can I add more vegetables to my plate? How can I shop for whole foods? You feel more control. Over time, these nutritious choices will naturally crowd out other things. What happens if, okay, when we blow it? Treat yourself with grace and compassion. If you binge on Netflix and chips instead of going to the gym, recognize that this isn't the end of the world. Then ask yourself, what are the things that got in the way of me doing what I intended to do? Take note without judgment. Adjust your plan for tomorrow. Guilt and shame just hold you back. Well, here's a true story by Jennifer McDonald's 38. I did a 180. When I started making my own wine at home in 2014, my friends and family kept saying, "This is good. Would you ever make it into a career?" I had a successful career in human resources, but wine was my passion. And I got a master's degree in agribusiness, and I started taking classes in chemistry. Once I had all the preparation under my belt, I felt ready to get Jenny Dawn Cellars, the first urban winery in Wichita, Kansas, off the ground. There were challenges. I had to walk and talk to 9 different banks to get a loan and speak to hundreds of investors before 5 came aboard. As the first African-American woman winemaker in Kansas, I also felt a lot of racism and discrimination. I've been very discouraged at different points of my journey. But early on, I got a tattoo on my wrist that reads, "Have faith, never give up." Seeing it every day kept me inspired. So did feeling like my business is bigger than me. There's a lot of diversity in the wine industry, and I want to open doors for others. How to make over your self-esteem. Everyone has insecurities, says Joyce Martyr, LCPC, founder of the Urban Balance, a national counseling practice. Once we recognize the voice of our inner critic, we can learn to talk to ourselves in a different way. Here, she gives guidance for negotiating a few familiar hang-ups. You feel down when someone you hear about someone else's life is perfect. If there is one thing I've learned from being a therapist for 2 decades, it is that we all have our problems, even people who look outwardly like they have it all. So stay in your lane. Reflect on your wins. What have you done recently that you are proud of? Embrace the abundance theory. Your friend obtaining success doesn't mean you will have less of it. There's plenty of success to go around. You belittle your accomplishments. We have a hard time acknowledging our successes. We feel like we have to apologize for them so that other people don't feel threatened. We say things like, "They only promoted me because I hung around so long." But you are not honoring yourself. You are teaching other people to think less of you. Next time you receive a compliment, look the person in the eye, smile, and simply say, "Thank you. I am happy too." Revel in the moment. It gets easier with practice. You nitpick your body in the mirror. Instead of scowling at your cellulite, develop the habit of practicing gratitude for all your body does for you. For example, maybe you think, "I don't love my midsection, but when I look at it, I'm reminded where my 2 beautiful daughters grew." How amazing is that? You might thank your feet for carrying you through your first ever 5K, and your eyes for allowing you to watch the sunrise. You beat yourself up over small mistakes. Ask yourself how you would talk to a friend who did the same thing. You would be empathetic and supportive. Speak to yourself that same way. For example, if you forget about an appointment, you might say, "Everyone has done that. Don't be so hard on yourself." How about you set a reminder on your phone so you don't make that same mistake again? Here's another true story by Amber Baldwin 49. I downsized way down. I used to work 60 to 100 hours each week in my corporate finance job, but I wasn't taking care of myself. When I learned at a routine checkup that I was borderline for diabetes, heart issues, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure, I realized I needed a lot less stress in my life. Within 2 months, I put my house up for sale and bought a 26-foot RV and sold everything I owned. I was scared of the unknown, of camping by myself. Even that, my new RV would break down and leave me stranded. But I kept telling myself, on the other side of fear is your greatest reward. 3 years later, I've happily traveled to 33 states, Canada and Mexico, and have no end in sight. I now mentor others on how to finance a full-time travel lifestyle and start an online business on the road. It's easy to get overwhelmed when you feel your dream is too big, but when you break it down into steps, it becomes doable. How to commit to your friendships. Our pals often fall to the bottom of a winding to-do list, but research shows that friendships are actually the relationships that bring us the most undiluted joy, says psychologist and friendship expert Marissa Franco, PhD. And here are some ways to bolster your connections, ranging from easy to intense, but it's so worth it. Try repotting. Maybe you have a colleague you'd like to become better friends with. Just as with a plant, change the pot to give your room for friendship to grow, says Franco. Find a different setting to spend time together and ask if she wants to check out a sculpture garden or a new coffee place. You'll see a different side of each other, a first step toward a deeper relationship. Schedule an ongoing activity. A standing date on your calendar builds buddy time into your routine. I created a wellness group with a group of friends, says Franco. They meet weekly to do things like meditate and hike together. Seeing each other so regularly really boosts our connection. If time is tight, multitask. You can grocery shop or walk your dogs and catch up at the same time. Keep it fresh. With old friends, you can fall in a too comfy rut. Let's have lunch, repeat. Let's make a point to try new things, says Rachel Wilkerson Miller, author of The Art of Showing Up and How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. It can be as simple as let's read the same book and discuss it, or make a new dessert. And catch the details. In our buzzing 5G world, attention is getting scarcer, yet it's what we crave from others. When you really listen to a friend, it'll bring you closer. Wilkerson Miller has an old school suggestion. Take notes, jot down the addictive podcast she recommends, the name of her weird boss, and when her family will be revisiting. We think we will naturally remember all this stuff, but we usually don't. Next time you see your friend, tell her your thoughts about that podcast. Your notes can also serve as a snapshot of your friendship at that moment, which is really nice. And show vulnerability. Nothing cements a friendship more than being present when the other person needs you. Stop by with a thermos of tea and open ears at the end of a hard day. Send a supportive text before a nerve-wracking interview. Be sure to reach out to pals when you are struggling. Asking for support from other communicates, I trust you, I feel close to you. It is strong glue. We overestimate the risk of being vulnerable and underestimate its rewards. Another true story of a person that took a leap. Dior Viargas, 35. I stopped hiding my mental illness. I've had major depression and suicidal thoughts since I was a child. For years, I did not share my mental illness with anyone. I didn't want to burden my family and was fearful of how others would view me. Not until college did I finally open up to a few friends. I trusted my gut that it was okay to be vulnerable with them. My Latinx friends shared their own experiences, which helped me decide to become a mental health activist. To show more diversity in images of mental illness, I created the People of Color and Mental Illness Photo Project. I asked people to submit a selfie, including a sign that expressed something about their mental health. When that request was met with a lot of apprehension, I decided to publicly share my own photo. My sign read, "My name is Dior Viargas. I have a major depressive disorder." Being honest felt freeing and encouraged more than 100 others to become part of the project. We all deserve to be open and compassionate about our struggles, and when we do, we become better advocates for ourselves and others. And the last one is how to spark change in your community. It's another big leap to take, but worth it. Itching to find a way to give back and help out your neighbors? Keep these tips in mind, and then embark on your mission. Get centered. Anger may have been what catapulted you into action, but that is not a sustainable motivation. It leads to burnout and feeling overwhelmed, says Monica Bourgeau, author of The Change Code, a practical guide to making a difference in a polarized world. People stick with what makes them feel good. Can you reframe manning that phone bank as an act of service and love? And add some accountability. Make your intention public by telling a friend what you're going to do. Start somewhere. The first step is the hardest, says Bourgeau. Push beyond good intentions and commit to doing one small thing in the next 24 hours. If you are worried about hunger, make a list of local food banks you might volunteer at. Small actions build to big ones. Have an Insta impact. Too often social media is used to inflame, but it can be used to inspire too. The hashtag trash tag trend is a great example, says Bourgeau. Individuals post before and after photos of small areas of beaches and rivers and parks they cleaned up. Sharing your experience shows just what one person can do. And find those peeps. Sending a check or signing a petition certainly helps, but bonding with a group of people working on the same cause is the secret sauce of political change. And another true story from Deanna Taylor, 36. I went from yo-yo dieting to a personal trainer. When I was 22, a doctor I consulted about a breast reduction told me I needed to lose 70 pounds. I made a few attempts to take off the weight, but it always came back. Then, in 2010, while preparing for the bar exam, I decided on a plan. During my 10 weeks of studying, I walked 30 minutes each day. It became a part of my daily routine that I no longer had to think about. The weight started coming off, which gave me confidence to join a YMCA. So many people asked me for help with their own fitness that I became certified as a personal trainer as well as a lawyer, which I never would have imagined all those years ago. Getting fit isn't a quick fix. It's a lifestyle change. Long-term change first starts mentally within you. Love That Lasts by Ginny Graves. Amid all the recent whiplashing developments in the world, pandemics, politics, one thing has remained stable. People continue to fall in love. Even with the outbreak of COVID-19, applications for marriage license actually surged in some parts of the country in February and March last year. Those newlyweds may be on to something. A number of surveys have found that married people are, by and large, happier than non-married people. But as many not tire knows, sometimes partnerships aren't simple, nor are they static. Our love relationships are always evolving, says Helen Fisher, Ph.D., Senior Research Fellow at the Kinsley Institute and author of Anatomy of Love. We asked Fisher and other experts for advice on how to keep the happy and happily ever after. The season of sizzle. The first year or two of a relationship is marked by some heady factors: daydreaming about your partner, seeing the best in him or her. Imaging studies show that the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, the brain region linked with fault finding, is abnormally quiet when you're falling in love. and having sex and more sex, an activity that promotes bonding. Genital stimulation triggers dopamine, a chemical in the brain's reward system that's associated with pleasure. An orgasm releases a flood of oxytocin and vasopressin, which promote attachment, explains Fisher. That mix promotes this feeling of mindless, obsessive love. Now that your brain is hijacked by love chemicals, it's easy to miss red flags, says Lisa Marie Bobby, PhD, founder of and clinical director of Growing Self-Counseling and Coaching in Denver. If you are eager to find a life partner, it can be tempting to ignore pings of concern about your partner, whether it's major differences around values or substance use issues or mental health. Thinking intentionally about what you want in a long-term partner and identifying the deal breakers can help you stay committed to your own needs, if not your partner. Work on your communication skills, says Camille Lafleur, PhD, Assistant Professor of Marriage and Family Therapy in the graduate program at Oklahoma Baptist University in Shawnee. Before you have a conversation, write down the key message you want to convey, she suggests, and try not to rush when you're talking. Share one or two thoughts at a time, then pause. Understand your true intention and really listen to his or her response. Listening and being heard are fundamental for a happy partnership. After a few years of couplehood, the early euphoria wanes a little, but in its place is something better, a sense of trust. You're revealing your secrets, hopes, and dreams, which builds intimacy, says Bobby. As you share every facet of your life, you come to understand each other more clearly and often care for each other more deeply. When the love goggles come off, you may see things like your partner you don't like and vice versa. It's easy to become disenchanted because we think our soulmates are supposed to be perfect and relationships aren't supposed to have problems. In reality, all relationships, like all humans, are a mixed bag of good and bad. Ask yourself, is this behavior or pattern something we can talk about and work through? If so, how? Successfully working through problems deepens trust. Remind yourself of the things you adore and admire about your partner. In the beginning, you may have loved his or her spontaneity and creativity, but when you're at the stage where you need to clean out the garage, those traits can be frustrating. Fisher's research shows that couples in happy long-term relationships naturally minimize what they don't like about their partners and focus more on what they do. Every couple has conflicts, Fisher says, and they often strike during challenging times, when work is demanding, financial stress is high, or you're raising kids. Regardless of what you're fighting about, at the core of every conflict are similar themes: feeling uncared for, disrespect, or devalued. Helping your partner understand those underlying reasons and why you're upset can reduce the conflict. Be specific, suggests Amanda Pasciusko, a marriage and family therapist and clinical sexologist in West Hartford, Connecticut. You can say, I'm feeling angry at you because you went out with your friends instead of helping me around the house. The story I'm telling myself about that is that you don't care. Be careful not to show contempt. Eye-rolling, ridicule, mockery, and sneering communicate a lack of respect, the foundation on which healthy relationships are built. Practice kindness. Surprise your partner with small gifts, lend a hand with tasks, or spend time together doing something he or she enjoys. Unexpected kindness triggers the brain's reward system, which is connected to romantic love. And say several nice things to your partner every day. It lowers their cortisol and yours. Here's some hopeful news. Researchers at Pennsylvania State University and Brigham Young University found that marital qualities improve after 20 years. While shared activities dwindle in the first two decades, happy long-time couples start doing more fun stuff together, like visiting friends and going on walks. Boredom can settle in, and after many years, couples are often comfortable, but they might also be bored or living largely separate lives. To reconnect and reawaken excitement and passion, do new things together, whether it's taking a cooking class, a dance class, or going on a hiking trip. Novel experiences can rekindle the spark. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Tony Ray with Healthy Life. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Medical Center Hospital ProCare primary care physicians and specialists are continuing to provide care during the COVID-19 pandemic through telehealth visits. This allows established and new patients to visit with a doctor from the comfort of their own homes. Patients can connect directly with a provider from their smartphone, computer, or tablet. Simply call one of our MCH ProCare offices to schedule an appointment. For a list of providers, they can also visit procareodessa.com/find-a-physician or call 640-6468 for more information. Medical Center Health System and MCH ProCare want the community to know we are here for the community during these uncertain times and that we are dedicated to continue making sure West Texans are treated and taken care of.
Throughout the week, we bring you health and accessibility programming. Mondays at 10 a.m., keystrokes. Mondays at 5 p.m., the Assistive Tech Update. Mondays at 5:30 p.m., blind abilities. Wednesdays at 10 a.m., the Blindness and Disability News Hour. The AARP Report and the Diabetic News Programs fill out the hours Thursdays at 4 a.m. and 10 a.m. and Sundays at 6 p.m. Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
I'll never let you see the way my broken heart is hurting me. I've got my pride and I know how to hide all my sorrow and pain. I'll do my crying in the rain. If I wait for cloudy skies, you won't know the rain from the tears in my eyes. You'll never know that I still love you so, though the heartaches remain. I'll do my crying in the rain. Raindrops falling from heaven could never wash away my misery. We're not together. I look for stormy weather to hide these tears. I hope you'll never flee. Someday when my crying's done, I'm gonna wear a smile and walk in the sun. I may be a fool, but till then, darling, you'll never see me complain. I'll do my crying in the rain. I'll do my crying in the rain. I'll do my crying in the rain.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 58 and clear. Tonight clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night it will be cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Monday, January 25th, 2021. Starting with the money section, on Mondays, I guess there is no money line column, so we'll start with the first article. Biden's orders aim to help the neediest people. This by Paul Davidson. Food assistance and wage increase are among the goals. President Biden isn't wasting any time in his bid to